Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve, and he is. I'm going to let him introduce himself this time. And he's.
Oh, Lawrence Van Beek.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Sorry.
It's not the A answer, but it's a solid B. Yeah, it's a solid B.
I can't say PhD, though. I have to say BAMADTH, which is.
Wow, it's like you're doing a chemical formula there or something. Yeah. Okay, but hey, folks, it's good to be back with you. Larry and I are excited to share with you. You know, Larry, I think we should tell them what we're going to share with them.
Ah, I think we are going to talk about three visions of Daniel that all talk about the same thing.
Okay.
There's actually three visions and another whole chapter that talk about the exact same thing.
So is it kind of like deja vu for the third time? Would that be it?
It is, but he changes the vision.
Okay.
But it covers the same, it's the same material. It's the same topic. So it's three completely separate visions, but the historical accuracy or the historical value of it is the same. What he points at is the same every time.
Now, would he do this type of thing? Sorry, before we jump in, would he do this type of thing to reinforce a message to the reader, or is it just simply the way that God gave him the message for affirmation or something like that?
See, and that all depends, Steve, on how you read the book, how you read the book of Daniel. Not how you read prophecy, and maybe how you read prophecy overall.
Okay.
Because he saw these three visions. If you do the timeline of the book, he saw them over a period of about 70 years.
Mm.
But if you say the whole thing was written after 160 BC, you know, during the Maccabean period, if you say that it was written then he could have written it in a very, very short period of time.
Okay.
But if the actual lifespan of Daniel is involved here, these are three visions he had at three completely separate periods in his life.
Okay. Okay.
All cool. About the same thing.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, take us where you'd like us to go and we will follow.
Okay. Now, I don't think if we read all three chapters, it might take us a little bit too long. So what we'll do is we'll point at them.
Okay.
We'll go from there, which might not take us long enough. But
well, tell you what, we'll pause, let them read it.
Yeah. when I was publishing my doctoral thesis, it was a little bit too short for publication. And they asked me to add 70 pages, which I never did, so it didn't get published. But then afterwards they said, you should have just done a thing on Enoch, on the Book of the Watchers of Enoch. He said, just do a translation of Enoch, and that would have covered your 70 pages. And I said, you should have told me that back when I was trying to publish it. Because I would have done that.
Yes, information after the fact, not as useful as you might think it would be.
It wasn't very helpful.
No.
It didn't seem to hurt my life. But
yeah.
So, actually, so the first vision of Daniel, and remember, all these visions are about the same thing. The first one was right in the beginning. And people who date it really early. They date it around, you know, 603 to 600 BC. It might be a little later than that. Daniel, we think, was taken to Babylon 607 to 605, somewhere around there. And it was just a few years after that Nebuchadnezzar had this dream. Remember, it was the dream of the giant man?
Yeah, so we're talking Daniel 2, right? Just so I can track with
you. Yes, I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Daniel chapter 2. And that's where Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. And he calls all of his magicians and astrologers together and says, I want you guys to interpret my dream. And they said, sure, tell us your dream, we'll interpret it, no problem. And Nebuchadnezzar says, well, actually, you're supposed to be magicians and astrologers. Tell me my dream. And then interpret it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
It's what we've done to every carny at the fair, right?
Yeah.
Tell me.
And then we finished by saying, and by the way, if you can't, I'm just going to kill you all. Mm. Because what's the point of you if you've been living this lie?
Yeah.
Which they had been. They were completely terrified, and they looked around, and Daniel hears of this, and he and Daniel says, and it's so it's Daniel and the three Hebrew boys. He says, let me go, and I'll tell him. I'll interpret his vision. I'll interpret the vision." And Nebuchadnezzar comes to Daniel and says, "Well, okay, tell me my vision." And Daniel says, "Well, give me a little bit of time." And he goes and prays, and then he comes back and says, "Listen, no wise man or diviner or anybody could tell you this. Only there is a God in heaven who reveals these mysteries, right?" And then he tells him the vision about the big guy, about the giant statue. And this statue has a golden head and silver arms, chest and arms, and then bronze, you know, his belly is bronze, and then his legs are iron, and his feet are iron with clay mixed in the toes.
Okay.
And so this is the vision. So he tells Nebuchadnezzar the vision, and then he goes on, and he actually just straight out interprets this vision for him. And fortunately, in Daniel, the interpretation is given to us. Okay, so in verse 31, he says, "Majesty, there was a large statue, dazzling statue, ominous statue." And then verse 36, he says, "This is the dream, and I'm going to interpret it for you." Okay? And he says, "Your Majesty, you are the King of Kings. The God of Heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he's placed all mankind and beasts of the fields and the birds in the sky. You are the head of gold," right? So absolute wonderful thing to him. Like, you're the greatest kingdom there will ever be. And that actually plays out later on, that Babylon is the greatest of kingdoms, because later on when they're talking about Rome, and in the book of Revelation, they actually refer to Rome as Babylon.
Okay.
So Rome is a revitalization of Babylon.
Okay.
Oddly enough, Germany calls itself a revitalization of Rome. The Third Reich was the that's where that ties in.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah, I hope I'm right about that. Because if I'm wrong, well, then we'll just keep on going. I mean, what have we ever been right about? So anyway, so Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. And then he says, "There's going to be one after you that's not as great as you, and that's going to be Medo-Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire. And the Medes and the Persians, for some reason during that period of time, joined together, right?
Right.
And they took over Babylon. And if you read in chapter 6 of Daniel, Belshazzar is having a feast, and he brings in the chalices, the cups and the dishes from the temple.
Right, right.
And he's having a party and drinking out of them, and that finger writes on the wall, "Many, many tekel upharsin." And then Daniel is asked to interpret that vision. He says, "Well, basically that says you've been weighed in the balances and found wanting." You know, sort of like the guy in Knight's Tale, remember?
Right.
At the end, they're looking down on him after they beat him in the Battle of Lances.
Yes.
And he says, "Yeah, you've definitely been found wanting." Well, that's what they say to Belshazzar. Well, with Belshazzar, what happens is the people were so sick of him. Remember, we talked about that before. They just opened up the doors and let the Persian Empire in. The Persians in, and Persia took over Babylon at that time. Well, the chest of silver here, and the arms of silver, that's the Medo-Persian Empire.
Okay. Yeah.
And he tells him that, right? And then a little bit further down, he has this, the chest, or the belly and the hips and stuff of bronze. And the belly and the hips is the Greek Empire.
Okay.
And then the iron legs with the 10 toes, we think is the Roman Empire. Okay. So that's the vision he gives him in very early in his life in chapter 2. And Nebuchadnezzar's all impressed and honors Daniel and honors Daniel's friends. And Daniel actually becomes a magician. Total side note here, because it's Christmas.
Right.
And this might be completely false. But do you remember the Magi?
Yes.
The Magi that come to find Jesus actually come from the Iran-Iraq area.
Right.
We figure from Babylon, from the area around Babylon.
Right.
This is way, 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 way later, but Daniel was the head magician for all those years, so he was a magi. And I wonder if these guys had any of his writings or had any of his stuff. But the Jewish people were always there, so their thing could have been there. So them coming to find the Messiah, they don't have to have been Persian rulers or anything, or Greek or anything else. They could have been Jewish guys. I just throw that out as a possibility.
No, I like that as a for free thing. You know, that's something that is. Well, I was even noting that Daniel interprets this dream, right? Goes away and prays, interprets this dream, and says, "Don't kill the magicians. I have an answer from the Lord." You know, basically.
Yeah, and he could have said, "Like, kill them all."
Yeah,
and I'll just do this on my own.
Let's get rid of my enemies. I got a great side business here.
Yeah, you know, and Daniel is so oddly political all the way through, right? Mm-hmm. and yet. He was a very cool guy in that way.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's the very first vision that he has.
Okay.
And it's that vision that sets Daniel and his friends up to be as important as they are in the kingdom of Babylon. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is as impressed as anything, but later on he has a second vision that we're not going to do today.
Okay.
And that's the one where he tells Nebuchadnezzar, you know, you're going to become crazy for a period of time.
Right.
Right.
You're nuts.
And Nebuchadnezzar, for some reason, he understands God here, but he still sets himself up as being really important, and then goes like a wild animal for a period of time. For, you know, 7 is actually the number that they use, like they use all the time. Now, the second time Daniel has this vision is in chapter 7.
Okay.
Now, chapter 7 is the first year of Belshazzar's reign as the king of Babylon, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Belshazzar is the guy with the many, many Tekel Upharsin. He was probably grandson, great-grandson, relative of Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay.
So he wasn't Nebuchadnezzar's son anyway. Okay. So now Daniel has a dream during his period of time, and now Daniel's, you know, he was probably in his 20s. Now he's in his 70s. Right, okay. So he's in that kind of that range.
Okay,
and he has his second vision, verse number 2 of chapter 7. Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me were 4 winds of churning up a great sea." And they think the great sea has to do with people. Remember the whole idea of seas and peoples.
Okay,
4 great beasts, each different from the others, came out of the sea. Now remember, there in Revelation, there's 4 beasts as well, mm-hmm. but they are. They're different than these beasts. There's some similarities. Like there's a lion and there's you know, there's an eagle and stuff. So there are similarities, but what happens to the beast is a bit different.
Okay.
So the first is like a lion. It had eagle's wings, and I watched. The wings were torn off, and it was lifted from the ground, so it stood on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of a human. Then the second was like a bear, and it was raised up on one of its side, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told to fill your eat of the flesh, right?
Mm.
Then the third is like a leopard. And on its back, it had 4 wings like those of a bird. By the way, cherubim had 4 wings. Seraphim had 6.
Oh, okay.
I think. This beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. So that's your leopard. And after that, in my vision, I looked, and it was a 4th beast that was terrifying and frightening. I don't know why these other beasts were.
Yeah. I'm fine with the other ones, but these guys is crazy.
You know, everybody loves a bear.
Especially one with ribs in his mouth. That's well, at least he's occupied. He won't attack us.
my neighbor, one of the people that worked with me here, she had a wolf just outside her yard yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And her dog jumped over the fence, big black wolf. And normally they run away, but he didn't. He backed off a little bit, but he didn't run away. Mm. And then the dog had trouble getting back in the yard. It was there's no wolf here though, so I don't know why why I even mentioned it. But it's quite an interesting thing, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this was a terrifying vision, chapter verse 7. It had large iron teeth, it crushed and devoured its victims, and it trampled underfoot whatever was left. And it was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns.
Hmm, there's those 10 horns that we've seen before, right?
Yeah, yeah. We've seen them. We see them here, and we see them again in Revelation. Mm-hmm. Right? And remember, some people want to bring that right into the future of us or into the present.
Right.
In the 70s and 80s, they thought those 10 horns were the 10 countries of the Commonwealth. But that has all changed now, so you have to do something different. And right. Speculating about the future is fine. I mean, we've all done it. We all do it. We do it in our investments. We do it
as we were talking pre-show.
Talking earlier. Yeah, it's all a crapshoot, really.
Yeah.
And so is this kind of speculation. But now he also sees the Ancient of Days taking his seat. So there's this. I wanted to point that because that is very important, because that is very much a vision of Jesus.
Mm. Mm.
And it looks like it here as well. Now, either Revelation picked up on this type of thing and then used it for Jesus,
okay.
Even though Daniel was talking about something else, or Daniel actually had a thought of that in his own thing. Now, this vision Daniel interprets as well. And you're going to find out that when he interprets this vision, he's going to do exactly the same thing. He says, I was troubled in my spirit. The visions passed through my mind. They disturbed me. Verse number 17.
Yep.
The four great beasts are four kings that will rise out of the earth. But the holy people of the Most High will receive a kingdom and will possess it forever. And all Christians want to pull that into yep. Christ and Christianity, right?
Mm, mm, mm-hmm.
And the kingdom that is forever in Jesus. Whether Daniel was thinking that or not, I don't know. And whether he was completely pointing at that, because he is being quite specific about the kingdoms that he's talking about here, right?
Mm.
I wanted to know the meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and more terrifying with its iron teeth and bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and the other horn that came up before the three fell, the horn that looked more imposing than the others and that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boldly. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the holy people, defeating them until the Ancient of Days pronounced judgment in favor of the holy people and the Most High, and a time came when they possessed the kingdom. The fourth beast, in the explanation, the fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on the earth, different from all other kingdoms. It will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are the 10 kings that will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will rise, different from the earlier ones, and will subdue the three kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his holy people and try to change the set times and laws. The holy people will be delivered into his hands for time, and half a time. Okay?
Okay.
So, now when Daniel talks about these beasts, again, the first beast is Babylon.
Right.
Right? The second beast is the Medo-Persian Empire.
Okay.
The third beast is Greece. And the fourth beast is Rome. Now when I say this, I'm saying it from my perspective, because I'm fine with this being Rome. Every time I see this beast, this last one is being Rome, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember that people that think that Daniel wrote during the Maccabean period, they see the fourth one as being Greece. But the reason they see the fourth one as being Greece is because they cannot accept that Daniel could see Rome that clearly as he did. And plus in chapter 11, he is so clear about Greece, you know, and about Alexander the Great coming through and taking over the world.
Right.
That they don't see it as far as Rome. Now, most of us, I don't know if I can say that. Most of the people that I read are completely fine with him pointing to Rome as well.
Okay.
But then most of the people I read think that Daniel was written in about 540 BC.
Right.
Around there.
Yeah.
Right. 500 years before this happens.
Right.
And therefore, but he's just so completely clear about the Greek Empire.
Mm, mm.
here, in the next one we read, in the next one. He's so specific. It's crazy how specific he is, that people felt like he had to live during that time in order to be that good.
I get you.
But for you and for us, Steve,
yeah.
That he is just a guy who's heard from God and is talking about the future, we are fine with that.
Yeah.
And I said you were fine with that too.
No, and I am fine with that too. Because it kind of does fit that, you know, especially that concluding thing of an empire that tramples down the whole known earth. You know, that does fit Rome quite nicely, doesn't it?
It does. It actually fits them all in some sense. Yeah. But it fits Rome the best.
Yep.
Rome covered more than any up until that period of time. I wonder if we looked at history, if Rome covered more than anybody ever has. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because
I'm thinking it's.
Wouldn't that extend from Britannia to, you know, Saudi Arabia to?
Oh yeah, no. Oh, that's right. I have a friend named Pat who would say no. Britain actually covered more than anybody ever has. But I don't know because you know because the sun will never set on the British Empire.
That's
never
true. Sets on the British. True. At
least it didn't.
Yeah, at one point.
At one point, yeah, and. But Rome controlled the whole known world.
Right.
Alexander the Great never did that.
Yep.
He got into Afghanistan and that was about his undoing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an oddity for those of us that know Afghanistan today.
Yeah, that's right. And still continues today.
That's right. So his third vision, and this becomes even clearer about the Greek Empire, and it's in chapter 8.
Okay.
And this happened during in the third year of Belshazzar's reign. So this is just a little bit later on. He had a vision again, so very close to the other one. He was standing in the citadel of Susa in the land of Elam. I'm going to go down to verse number 5.
Okay.
As I was thinking about this, oh, I have to read it earlier. Sorry, verse number 3. I looked up, and there before me was a ram with two horns standing beside the canal. And its horns were long, and one of the horns was longer than the other, but the other grew up later. So that's talking about kings, right?
Okay.
I watched the ram as it charged toward the west and the north and the south. No animal could stand against it. No one could rescue it from its power. It did as it pleased, and it became great. So that's the Medo-Persian Empire that he's talking about.
Mm.
Okay. And as I was thinking, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between its eyes came from the west, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. It came toward the two-horned ram I had seen stand beside the canal and charged it with a great rage. I saw it attack the ram furiously, striking the ram and shattering its two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against it. The goat knocked it to the ground, trampled it, and none could rescue the ram from its power. The goat became very great, but at the height of its power, its large horn was broken off, and its place, four prominent horns, grew up toward the four winds of heaven. So at this point in time, doesn't that sound as clear as a bell to you?
Yeah, right, because this is Alexander the Great, and then the split of that kingdom to the four generals, right?
That's right. And the first two horns, of course, are the Medo-Persian Empire, and Persia was strongest in the beginning, or Medo was, and then Persia. I shouldn't have said it because now I can't remember which is which. Because you got Xerxes and you got Darius, and then you got Xerxes, and some of that history is not 100% clear to us, right? As the way it goes. But we know that under Xerxes they attacked Greece.
Okay.
In the 400s, they attacked Greece, and that's when Persia went through to conquer the world, and Greece actually for the very first time came together. The city-states came together, and they fought off Persia, where you have your Athenian navy. Athenians were a fledgling navy that became more powerful over time. You've got all your stories about the greatness of the Spartans,
right.
You know. But there were other great Greeks, too. The Spartans weren't the only guys. There were Thracians and all kinds of guys
that were
really great. But the Spartans had their legend of the 300.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So, but then they actually defeated Persia, you know. During the Persian War, Persia lost against Greece, And then, in the years to come, Alexander's dad, Philip of Macedonia, he was just brilliant, and so he would they would when the different city states were fighting, as they were losing, he would kind of take them over, and Philip was the one who kind of pulled Greece together as one country instead of many city states.
Okay.
And then his son Alexander, who was raised and trained by a Greek slave, his son Alexander became king, and he was the one who took Greece and marched. Right?
Yeah.
My old teacher would say they always call him Alexander the Great, but really Philip was the one who was great in this scenario, right? Mm. But Alexander then is the little horn on the goat.
Okay.
That starts pushing ahead. And he goes back to take over Persia, partly for the wrongs that they committed against him, but partly because he was an empire builder too. Yeah, Alexandria, Egypt was the place that had the great library, where they had, you know, the Jewish documents were there as well.
Right.
You know, from the Essenes and the Pharisees and others. And that they think that the library in Alexandria is where you get the Septuagint. Like there's ties with the Septuagint.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
And things like that. Well, all of this has to do with Alexander the Great going through. So he goes through. He gets bogged down in Afghanistan. He dies in about 323. And in the movie Alexander, you know, like who actually killed Alexander the Great? Well, it was Oliver Stone that killed him. as the joke about his movie goes, but we don't know how he died. Some say malaria, some say some kind of disease. We don't know how he died.
Yeah.
But when he died, he split his empire to his four generals, which is what you just talked about. And if it means anything to you at all, his four generals were. I always want to say Lysander, but it's not. It's Cassander was over Macedonia and Greece. Lysimachus had Thrace and a big part of Asia. But the ones, if you're a biblical studies person, the ones that are important was Ptolemy got Egypt.
Mm.
And a guy named Seleucus the First got Mesopotamia and some of Persia. So we usually put Ptolemy in Egypt and then Seleucus Damascus.
Okay.
Damascus is the oldest city to ever have the same name continuously, and it's still there today. Right?
Right.
People are having trouble in Damascus, even as we speak. They're probably having a rough time on it.
Right.
So Daniel talks very specifically about the four generals, right? And then later on in chapter 11, he's going to even go further. But we won't take time with that today. But he even goes further and talks about what some of the historical events that happened between Egypt and Damascus. And so they kind of those other guys just go off and do their thing, and then these two are always arguing over what goes on in Jerusalem.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Yeah. Well, like you said. Daniel hits this on the head, right? Square on.
Oh man. Like when you read chapter 11 even, I mean, he is so clear about what goes on when he talks about the king of the south fighting the king of the north. That's Ptolemy against the Ptolemies against the Seleucids. And how the Ptolemies were powerful for quite a while and the Jews had it pretty good. And then the Seleucids came in, but they were very strong about Greek culture.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to push Greek culture on, you know, getting in some of the movies, they talk about people reversing their circumcisions and things so that they could be Greeks, and which would be, you know, really awful, I think. Difficult for guys to think about. But and then Antiochus coming in, and that's the beginning of the whole Maccabean period.
Right.
Was that offering in the temple. According to tradition, at least.
Yep.
So Daniel. Now we didn't talk about the Roman Empire, but most of us believe the ten horns are talking about, you know, the emperors after Caesar. So that's what Daniel's about. And you can see how Revelation could pick up on some of this stuff.
Right.
But I don't think Daniel is doing what Revelation did. I don't think so. Like some of the guys you read now will look at Daniel and they'll pick up the Islam and you know, they'll talk about the horns, one horn being Islam and the other horn being the papacy.
Okay.
And things like that. And I'm not seeing that in Daniel. I'm thinking Daniel's more specific to his age.
Right. Right. It doesn't mean that, but like you said, it doesn't mean that John didn't use some of that imagery. You know, when he talks about Babylon as Rome, everyone would have understood what he was talking about right there and there, because he used similar imagery, right?
The Jewish guys would, or the Christians would too. His audience would. They really knew the, like, wow, that's not fair for me to say they really knew their Bible. Like, how do I know? I mean, they might have been like us, right? But it would have been the literature that they had,
right?
And and Babylon was great. And to talk about Rome being a Babylon revived, you know, and there were so many similarities too, right? Like the hills that they sat on were the same. It's very cool stuff.
Good point.
Yeah. So I think that's more than enough for one day, and I apologize for going through so much stuff.
Oh, but that's right. Awesome, because like you said, you know, here's Daniel. Again, important to note, and you said this early on, but important to note, folks, this is across a 70-year period or more, right? So don't lose that perspective either, that this is not Daniel just waking up one day, oh, I had another dream I should tell you about, by the way. He put up another Facebook post. My dream of the day is, oh, wow, that's awesome. long-term, God speaking to Daniel over a long, long period of time. So, no, but this is awesome stuff. Folks, as always, we are so happy that you came with us on this journey today. You know, Larry and I are excited to do this stuff. We're excited just that you listen. Heck, all two, three, four of you, five of you, six. Stop me when I'm close. just joking. But thanks so much for watching along with us. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Thanks.